Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
No, sorry. I'm just picking up a lot of static on your end.
Oh, I'm on my phone headphones. So is that better? Okay.
A little bit now, yeah. Do you have one of the ones where it like kind of hangs down beneath?
Yeah, I can put them up like on my head. That might help a little bit.
Yeah, because sometimes those rub against like your chest or something, and it's rubbing against your dad bod there or something.
It's manly. I can't help it.
All right. Any better luck here?
A little bit better right now. I don't know. Say something.
The arsonist has oddly shaped feet.
Yeah, that's fine.
The human torch was denied a bank loan.
I mean, it still comes in every now and then, but if it's coming in while you're talking, people are going to be like, ugh, don't want to listen to this crap. I pay nothing to listen to this podcast. I expect high quality.
Oh, you got the ATST today? Awesome.
No, I got that the other day in the mail. I got this one today. This one came in the mail, I think it was a few days ago.
Awesome. Sweet. See, this is the best part of parenting, Juan, is when you can get all the toys that you want to get, including like the Hot Wheels AT-ST.
I think I'm going to pass because I don't want a sex trophy right now.
We'll throw up one more flag here and see if anybody wants to hop in. But
I doubt it. They can go suck it.
Two podcasts within a week. They're not going to know what to expect from us.
Hey, if Purdue can do a double flea flicker, then we should do a double podcast. Why not?
Oh, yeah. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. Yeah, you're getting two this week. Yeah, it's double shock power as Purdue football actually looking good in a primetime nationally televised game means two podcasts within a couple of days. We have a pretty small contingent tonight. It's just me and Juan, who is joining us from up in Ann Arbor. How you doing, Juan?
Pretty good. For me, football-wise, it was a great weekend. Thursday night, we saw the Patriots lose. That was awesome. Friday, obviously, was the Purdue game, which, I don't know. I keep watching that double flea flicker, and I get excited every time. Like, it's just, I can't get enough of that. It's like cocaine for me now. And then Saturday.
To quote Bob Costas from the Immortal Basketball, you're excited? Feel these nipples.
Or I like how EDSBS, Spencer Hall, was like, I'm taking off my clothes now to watch Purdue's offense. Granted, he's a Florida fan, so he doesn't know what an offense is. We can say that we can make fun of other teams' offenses now. It's awesome.
I know. I mean, I'm actually a tad more scared of Illinois, but maybe not, just because they beat Western Kentucky at home 20-7. And part of me is like, I thought Western Kentucky was going to boat race them because I have no respect for Illinois this year whatsoever. But on the other hand, if Western Kentucky is suddenly that bad that they can lose by two touchdowns to Illinois, and we all because we took their coach, hey, you know, this is a fantastic thing.
I mean, I guess Vegas every now and then throws some easy money for some people. I mean, I can't really blame them. They barely beat Ball State the week before, and then, you know, they were a touchdown underdog at home in a night game against Western Kentucky and win. I think part of that also, too, people thought Western Kentucky, you know, might still be good after losing Brom. But, you know, it seems like they still have some calibrating to do there.
Yeah, it's interesting to see because I thought that I know they lost some of their better skill players and everything, but I know that they had their quarterback was returning and they had about as relatively seamless of a transition as you can get for a non-Power 5 school because I think they ended up promoting one of Brom's assistants. It was interesting to see that. And I also know that part of what happened is Brom brought a bunch of the recruits that he did have already at Western Kentucky mm-hmm. with him to Purdue. So.
And I think you got a few to transfer as well.
Well, we got McCollum, I know.
Okay.
He was the big one. And he's having a fantastic season for Purdue so far. Yeah. I mean, two games in, I think he's our leading tackler in all as a grad transfer, which is wonderful to see.
This has been pointed out before, but that's always a good sign when the players want to follow the coach. You know, it yes. may have just been one or two and the recruits too, but it just shows, I think, the power Brom has now. You know, he's going to push the players, but he's going to be well-liked as well, you know?
Okay.
I think even Blau said that he would run through a wall for him, I think. I may be paraphrasing him, but it shows that, you know, he has a really good connection with these players, and I think that's translating well early on in the season. When Gerard Parker took over last year, like, you could see, I mean, the talent gap was still there, obviously, but you could tell there was, you know, these players had this connection with the coach, and they were ready to fight for him and fight on the field. I mean, granted, it would only last a quarter or maybe one half because, you know, they were playing teams like Penn State and Wisconsin, who were still really damn good, and Purdue wasn't. And you can't out-hazel a player in just a few weeks.
Parker still got the most that he could get out of him, really. I mean, they were at least prepared in all six games as opposed to getting their doors blown off like they did against Iowa and Maryland.
Right. And I think part of that, too, is sometimes, you know, the players, if they... I mean, I've never been a football player, and I was a professional bench warmer in basketball by the eighth grade, so this shows you how well I know how players relate to coaches. But, you know, I get the sense that maybe the players didn't relate well to Hazel, and they just would give up, too. I mean, we shouldn't be talking... That's all in the past now, anyway. But point is that...
We have good football to talk about now.
Yeah, the Brom squad is fighting for these players. They're motivating the players, and the players are following suit. And I think we're already seeing that early on, 2 weeks in. I mean, they gave Louisville a hell of a fight. They just completely blew out Ohio. It could have easily been, they could have easily had 10 more points too, if had it not been for the drop passes early on in the first quarter.
Right, because I was a little bit concerned early on when they jump out 10-0. And it probably should have been a little bit more than that. Then it got to 10-7, and it looked like Ohio was just going to gain some momentum. And all of a sudden, a 24-point explosion in the second quarter. And that was benefited by a couple turnovers that, you know, I honestly missed because I had to take a four-year-old to the bathroom. It's like I go to the bathroom and we're up 24-7, and I come back.
To be clear.
It's suddenly 34-7. I'm like, what? What happened?
To be clear, the four-year-old is his son.
Yes.
Probably should state that for the record.
Four-year-old, yes.
This is not Penn State.
Oh, we're just going to do that now. I like it. Oh,
of course. But I was watching the replay of it because, I mean, I couldn't just get enough of watching the Purdue game once. It's like a first time I actually want to watch a Purdue replay in the last 4 years. But, I mean, so yeah, they go up 10-0. I almost said Ohio State. Although Ohio Bobcats probably have a better offense than Ohio State right now.
Well, and... I mean, they have equal records. They're both 1-1.
So Ohio brings it to 10-7. Sindelar goes back out there, and then we go 3-and-out. And I think everyone's starting to get a little concerned. He's like, ooh, maybe what's going on here, guys? But then the defense gets a great stop. And then they put Blau back in, and I think he kind of revitalizes the offense a little bit. This whole two-quarterback system, I think we're still a little broken from the Hope days when we had Trubush and Marv and sometimes Henry in there too. Mm-hmm. But so far, the two-quarterback system, I think, is working because we have two great quarterbacks for Purdue. Sindelar is one who's
working about as well as expected.
Right. Sindelar is the one who's going to go out there, get the early touchdown, you know, get the offense fired up. And then Blau comes in. It's like, all right, we're going to start chugging down this field and just tear apart this defense little by little. And that worked wonderfully. I mean, it was also working against Louisville. And then once Blau started, you know, had the interceptions, you know, starting to look a little shaky, throw Sindelar are back in there, and it just revitalizes the offense again.
Here's an interesting one to look at, and I noticed this looking at the box score from both the Louisville game and the Ohio game. Very interesting to see how Brom has made some adjustments in play calling with, okay, this is working versus, okay, this is not working. Well, we're just going to do it. And I know that we're so used to the shoot fence of, well, damn it, we're going to do what we're going to do, whether it's working or not, and screw playing to our strengths. Against Louisville, Purdue had 57 pass attempts versus 21 rushing attempts. Against Ohio, Purdue had 23 pass attempts versus 44 rushing attempts. That's very telling to me that two games apart, Brom actually was able to make the very simple adjustment of, oh, hey, we might be able to run on this team. Let's run it. Versus, oh, Louisville, they might have a strong run defense. Well, let's pass on them. It's astounding to see that.
And that gives me... That gives you some hope for this season, too. I mean, we're playing Missouri next, who just fired their defensive coordinator, so we'll see what happens there. But that sort of adjustment is going to come in handy when Michigan comes to town in 2 weeks, because we've seen that, you know, the Michigan's defense is really good against the run. I mean, they held Florida to 11 yards. I mean, granted, Florida might not be good this year, but their passing is still, their passing defense is still a little iffy, I think. For those who don't know, I also have season tickets for Michigan being up here as a student. Mm-hmm. So I was at the game against Cincinnati yesterday, and I actually heard people behind me go on the record and saying they're scared to play Purdue. Like,
usually that's Ohio State.
Right. Well, of course. I don't blame them. You just mentioned the word Boilermaker and they go hiding under a rock. It's refreshing to like think that maybe we might not beat Michigan, but the fact that people are taking Purdue seriously just 2 weeks into the season is such a huge turnaround, because like the last 4 years, it's been like, heh, playing Purdue, all right, that's a win. Of course, Ohio State fans and Illinois fans can never say that. It's just an amazing change of pace already.
It is a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was just exciting to be in the stadium Friday night. And, you know, I'm going about and I'm in the concession line, or I go to the bathroom, or I'm just anywhere else in the stadium. And it's so interesting to see people actually surprised and talking positively about Purdue football. It was just, I really didn't know how to act. And, you know, I'm in line to get a beer in Shively, and a guy in front of me is like, wow, this actually looks like a football team this year. And I'm like, what, us?
Whereas like in the past, it's been like a fluke game, like, you know, Nebraska, which was on Halloween. So all the jokes are, oh, Purdue decided to dress up as a football team for Halloween.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to keep building on this one game at a time. I will maintain, I said this in the last podcast and I tweeted this out, that if Purdue beats Mizzou this upcoming Saturday, I think bowl talks are definitely a possibility. It's not dreamland. I think it's legitimately possible for Purdue to go to a bowl game if they win this Saturday.
Oh, I agree. And one of the ones that I was going to say, if I had been able to do the column of wild predictions before the season even started, was I thought Purdue was going to beat Missouri. I mean, even before we saw them play Louisville, that was going to be my upset special of, okay, this is going to be the game where Brom comes out and that's going to be the first upset. I expected to get blown out by Louisville. I expected to beat Ohio, but Missouri was going to be that one where it's the, okay, you know, maybe Purdue did make the right choice with Brom. And again, we're only two games into this, but it feels like we're just ahead of schedule, because you have the Louisville game where realistically Purdue very easily could have won that game, especially with the terrible officiating drive. And then
it's too soon to talk about that.
Then they go out, and I was worried about the letdown against Ohio. I was like, all right, we looked good against Louisville. We've seen this before. If they struggle with Ohio or even lose, then, you know, that the old Purdue fan in me was conditioned to, you know, feel really bad and start getting down on the team. But they took care of business. I mean, emphatically took care of business against Ohio. And really, this is kind of the next step beyond that. It's the, all right, you've challenged a ranked team. You've taken care of business against Ohio. Now you've got kind of a middling power conference team, and you're going to their house. What can you do? You know, I really think that we've got a legitimate chance to win this game. And whereas earlier I thought we were going to win it, we might actually be able to kind of win it going away, if that's at all possible.
Yeah. And assuming, you know, Purdue wins this game, so that'll be two wins. Rutgers, since they lost to Eastern Michigan yesterday, that's...
No, Rutgers is Rutgers. If you lose to Rutgers in Big Ten play, you're that should be an automatic. You don't go to a bowl no matter what you do.
So, yeah, so that's a third win there. I still think Illinois is almost a chalk-up win. So that should give us four, definitely. Northwestern has not had a great start this year. They struggled against Nevada, and they got blown out at Duke. I mean, Duke has lately been almost a top 25 team. They're not the Duke of the 2000s.
Duke's respectable in football.
But they got destroyed. I mean, I just saw the score coming in when I was in the Big House, and I'm like, damn, Northwestern, what the hell happened? I mean, granted, Northwestern tends to suck at the beginning of the year, so, you know, we'll see how that pans out. So I think that's a possible fifth win. And I think that Purdue will get at least one win against either Michigan, Wisconsin, or Nebraska.
You're going big there.
I think Nebraska is the most likely of them because their defense sucks. I mean, they were getting blown out at Oregon yesterday, and they made a good comeback to almost win that game. But nevertheless, their defense still has some question marks there. Michigan, like I was saying earlier, their front line is scary, but their secondary still has some soft spots there that I think Blau and Sindelar can take advantage of. And then Wisconsin, I mean, I'm just throwing that in there. If Purdue beats Wisconsin this year, they need to build the Brohm statue immediately after that game. So that would, so winning one of those would give us a sixth win. And I mean,
well, wow. I mean, just the fact that you're thinking we have a chance to legitimately beat Wisconsin, I think you're on hard drugs.
I mean, but, it's a 1% chance, but it's still a chance. Like, the fact that we can talk about Purdue might have a chance at playing hard, at least like competing against Wisconsin, is.
Well, and we did 2 years ago, but that was the game that Shoup and Hazel punted.
Yeah, and was, that was a rainy game.
So frustrating.
And, oh, no, it was. Oh, we're talking
that
about
was the one in Madison where they lost 24-7.
I was thinking the one in 2014 where they kind of hung around and then Wisconsin scored and Purdue gave up. Oh, yeah, it was that game where, oh, no, I remember that day. That was the day Michigan lost to Michigan State on that punt fumble. That's why I don't remember that day. That's the last I will talk about it.
Oh, well.
Well, I will say this from the 2015 Michigan-Michigan State game that it was silent leaving the big house. My friend goes to me, "Are you all right?" And then I just scream out loud, "I left Purdue for this?" And it was like kind of a comic relief for everyone around. It's like, oh, that guy's a Purdue fan too? Damn, he's having a bad day.
Poor bastard. I think the other one is critical here is we get the bucket game at home, and Indiana fans are feeling a little too spicy about their football team. And you're looking at an unprecedented thing where if Purdue loses to Indiana this year, no matter how, the fact that Indiana is actually respectably good this year and Purdue is still overcoming a lot, losing 5 in a row to Indiana has never happened, ever, ever. Purdue and Indiana have played close to, or they've played 119 times. Indiana has never once won 5 in a row. And that's what we're facing here, is
and 5 is their favorite number, too.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right.
They love the number 5 in Bloomington. They can never get past them. They can never get past it and reach the number 6, but they love the number 5.
Well, I mean, if you watch Indiana football Twitter, the greatest accomplishment in the history of Indiana football is beating a deplorable Purdue team 4 times in a row to go 6-6 or 6-7 twice.
Congrats, IU. You were better than Illinois.
But the last time that they won 4 in a row was 1944-47. And that was part of a string where they actually won 7 of 8 in a row from 40-47.
Okay, but that's during World War II.
Right.
I mean Crimson Corey always likes to point out that we always put asterisks whenever IU beats Purdue. But that deserves a damn asterisk because Purdue has a strong military history and probably a lot of Purdue players were, you know, fighting the frickin' war against the Japs and the frickin' Nazis.
The one win in there was 1943. Purdue won 7-0. And if I recall correctly, that was an undefeated, probably should have won the national title team for Purdue. Because if I look it up here...
Were you a fifth grader that year? Is that why you remember it so well?
Oh, yes, definitely. That was actually Purdue's last undefeated season in football. Which, I know, Purdue, undefeated season. And the reason we did not win the national title is Notre Dame went 9-1. And they claimed the national title. However, what makes that very interesting about their claimed national title is the one team that beat them was one of those wartime Midwestern academies, Great Lakes Navy, went 10-2, and Great Lakes Navy lost to Purdue. So it is a robbed national championship for Purdue football. And I'm not making this up. We beat the one team that beat the alleged national champion that year, Notre Dame.
You know, we claimed that one national title from like when John Wooden in like the 1920s or something like that. Like that was backtrack. It says, okay, Purdue was a national champion that year. I say we do the same thing for that 1943 national championship. Claim it as our own, damn it. Just fly a banner in Ross Aid and just see how many people actually get pissy about it.
Well, if you look it up, the same people that awarded Purdue the 1932 men's basketball title, if you really go back, Purdue does have one partial claim to a football national championship in 1931. They were awarded a Park Davis national championship. Now, great. That year, USC got like all the other, you know, if you look up like all the official polls of recognized national championships and, you know, back in the 30s, there's like 25 different ways they can award a national championship. But USC got most of them that year by going 10-1. However, Purdue and Pittsburgh were awarded a Park Davis national championship.
All right. So we got two national titles to claim now, to none for IU. So that's all that matters.
And that officially that is college football historian Park H. Davis was the only selector considered by the NCAA to have primarily used research in his selections. He did all of his work in 1933, naming retroactive national champions for most of the years from 1869 to 1932, while naming Michigan and Princeton, his alma mater, co-champions at the end of the 1933 season.
Smart man.
And, I mean, this is what he did with his research, and officially Purdue was awarded the 31 championship from him.
So we got two banners to fly now, and I'll say it. This is excellent.
And here's the other thing about that 1943 undefeated team. Notre Dame was named the national champion by everybody. AP, I mean, all the polls that are across here. But they were 9-1, and their one loss was to a team that Purdue defeated, and Purdue went 9-0. So there's your lost football national championship for Purdue football.
Big Ten hatred has been going on since the 1940s, man. No?
Yeah, so 1943. And as Juan said, that's when I was a fifth grader. So
that's why you're able to talk about it so much.
Anyway, we should probably actually look ahead to Missouri here before we finish up the podcast, because that will be Purdue's opponent next week in Columbia, Missouri. The Tigers have had a very interesting season so far. As Juan mentioned earlier, they just fired their defensive coordinator two games into the season. His name was DeMonte Cross, and he was hired as the defensive coordinator last season by Barry Odom, and he was actually stripped of his play-calling duties for defense last season, so that's a strong positive.
What you want for your defensive coordinator is to not be making the calls.
And two games of the season, he has now been let go. So they have an interim defensive coordinator, and probably with good reason, because Missouri's defense has been terrible of late. They started the season with a 72-43 win over Missouri State. Missouri State being of the Missouri Valley Conference at the FCS level, and not particularly a good Missouri Valley Conference team. I know the Missouri Valley Conference is generally, I would call them one of the top two conferences at the FCS level, because they've got North Dakota State, Illinois State's usually pretty good with Brock Spack, Youngstown State is in that conference as well. You know, they generally put a couple teams into the FCS playoffs. Missouri State's not one of those. They're already 0-2, but they managed to hang 43 points on Missouri, and it was 48-35 at halftime. So they put 35 points up on him and were leading 35-34 with 5 minutes to go in the first half. And then last week, the Missouri offense, which had put up 72 points on Missouri State, managed 13 points against South Carolina yesterday. South Carolina beat them 31-13, and South Carolina didn't even have a particularly strong game. They had 187 yards passing, 172 rushing, pretty pedestrian numbers. Yeah, the Missouri offense has not been strong, or Missouri defense, excuse me, has not been strong. They gave up 353 yards passing to an FCS team and 139 yards rushing. And you're talking about a Purdue offense that is probably going to be the best offense they've faced yet. And that's strange to think about. That's one of the reasons that we're excited here. And then you have the Missouri offense, which had 521 yards passing in the first week of the season. Drew Locke, and that was on 21 completions, to give you an idea of what he's done. And that was with 7 touchdowns and 1 interception against Missouri State. They put up 800 yards of offense on Missouri State. And then last week, facing a South Carolina team that is pretty middling, to be honest. You know, there wasn't a ton expected of them. They only were able to put up 13 points and 245 yards passing, 178 rushing. So that's an idea of what we're facing next week.
So I haven't looked at the stats. Did Mizzou have a lot of turnovers in that game as well? Because that's still a decent amount of yardage to only get 13 points out of it.
They had two interceptions. Doesn't look like they had many fumbles. I'm not sure if they had any fumbles or not, but they did throw two interceptions.
So
and they did lose a fumble.
Okay. So that's three turnovers. Did they miss any field goals here or something too? That might.
And they were up early in the game. They were actually ahead 10-0 at one point. They missed a field goal just before halftime, and that's it. And so okay. One missed field goal.
So, I mean, that also depends. I mean, I'd have to go back and watch for all we know these. I mean, just from my experience, like I remember last year's Cincinnati game, like that was the one where, you know, Blau had the five interceptions and whatnot. And I was looking at the box score before I saw the replay. It's like, but Purdue had a lot of yards in this game. Like, how the hell did we only score so little points? And then I see these interceptions and fumbles that occurred, like, at the end of the drives, you know, when they're trying to, you know, when they're in the Cincinnati end of the field. And so.
And at least a couple of them were tipped passes, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm saying this now because Drew's not here to rip on Blau right now. But the point what I'm trying to make is, you know, I have a feeling the Missouri's offense is still decent. They just maybe had these, you know, backbreaking interceptions and fumbles that just inopportune bad times as well. And I couldn't see if they had missed any field goals or anything. So who knows? Maybe they had a few in there, too. That definitely, I get the feeling that they left quite a few points on the field rather than putting them up on the board. So
you still look at that and they had a 10-0 lead. So they basically gave up a 31-3 run at home to lose by 18 points.
Sounds like what Purdue did often these last few years.
No, we would have had to have actually had a lead to give up.
Well, I know we had a 10-0 lead against Northwestern last year and then lost it and then got blown out. Anyway, that's besides the point. It's a black and gold tradition, I guess. Even though I think, you know, Purdue's looking good, Mizzou looks a little questionable. You know, it's just these road games. You never know what to expect out of them, especially for a first-year head coach. You know, this team is still feeling good, but, you know, there's still some adjustments going on there. And I can't chalk this up as a win yet, I think. I mean,
I think it helps that the Louisville game was not at home and that it was at least at a neutral site. That kind of felt like a road game. So, yeah. I mean, it's not like they were playing them in West Lafayette or anything to start. So,
well, seeing the picture from your end, you were looking at all the Louisville fans. So all their sound was coming towards you on TV. That sounded like a pretty neutral game.
It was very neutral. It's like my side of the field was the Purdue side. Because, you know, that's who I happened to get my tickets through and everything. You know, it was a good crowd both ways. And there were definitely some Louisville fans there that were like, holy crap, we did not expect it to be this close.
I don't think this game's going to be a gimme. I mean, even Vegas still opened up with Missouri being a touchdown favorite. I don't know if that's factoring the news that they just lost their defensive coordinator, or maybe it is. And they think, oh, maybe whoever their student intern, who's now the defensive coordinator, he or she might do a better job than what this guy does. So who knows? We'll have to see what happens here. It's definitely still going to be a test. I don't think we can chalk this one up yet as a win, like I said.
I think what's making it interesting is you could have two pretty good offenses going here. And I've been very pleased with the Purdue defense so far. And I love seeing them as an actual aggressive attacking defense as opposed to, well, we're just going to sit back and wait for them to complete the 15-yard pass before we tackle them. The Missouri defense is clearly a bit of a mess. And, you know, this could be one of those 45-42 type of shootouts, too, because you just don't discount a quarterback that threw for 500 yards and 7 touchdowns in a game, no matter who his opponent was. So I think we've done a good job of previewing who Purdue's opponent is this week. And Casey's not here to get us off on some sort of tangent or anything. So we can probably start to wrap this up and maybe we'll have another podcast this week. I don't know. Three would probably be too much of us to handle. And, you know,
yeah, maybe one.
Women all over the Midwest would be ovulating if they heard our voices three times a week. So
I'm pretty sure they're all running away right now. I don't think anyone ovulates when they hear your voice, Travis.
Hey, it worked once, so might as well.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
This is true. Yeah. Anyway, do you have any final thoughts, Juan?
I feel positive about Purdue football. It's such a weird thing to say, and I'm not even saying that sarcastically. Like, there's legitimate positivity around Purdue football. Let's enjoy it.
And I agree with you. It's like I grew up in the negative span of the Akers-Coletto era, and then I saw Tiller, and that was like a gift from the gods, and I thought that was going to last forever and that regular bowl game appearances were just kind of our birthright. And then unexpectedly, we descended back into the Akers-Coletto era. So it's very refreshing to be back here after such a nadir of just struggling with football. And hopefully we can keep it going this week. And I tend to agree with you. If Purdue can beat Missouri, then we actually will probably go to a bowl game, which is refreshing to think about, even if it ends up being the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, and we can win the Detroit Bowl under three different sponsors.
I want that because Ford Field is less than an hour from my apartment. I say that, and either Purdue is not going to go bowling in my last year here in Michigan, or they're going to get some random bowl in Florida, which, oh, yeah, sure, nice weather and all that crap, but that's not 45 minutes from my house, damn it.
And it's not a bad bowl game. I went to the Pizza Bowl in 2012.
Ford Field is nice. Downtown Detroit isn't that bad anymore.
Oh, yeah. It's not the frozen urban hellscape that it once was.
So, yeah. But let's aim for the Detroit Bowl. You know, just get the 6-6 to get to the Detroit Bowl, please. I mean, if we go to the Rose Bowl, fine. I can fly out to Pasadena, write it off as a work trip because I know people at JPL. But
yeah, I could write it off as a tax expense for running the blog and everything, and get a media credential. And I guess that I can, you know, get sideline passes for the Rose Bowl. You know, I'm willing to make these sacrifices.
I guess we could just, you know, win the Big Ten title, go to the playoffs. Win the national title against Alabama, but that's just so pedestrian, you know?
I already previewed how we could do this from the Rose Bowl, for crying out loud.
You called it. You might have called it.
Hey, I did say that we'd beat Louisville, but we're a major conference team. We can probably make the playoff with one loss, especially since it was a close loss on a neutral field to the defending Heisman champ. So,
I mean, the Rose Bowl, I don't think, is part of the playoff system this year. It's
one of the semifinals.
Oh, is it one of the semifinals this year?
Yes.
Darn. I guess, if we go 11-1 and win the Big Ten, baby steps, one game at a time. Don't book your trips to Pasadena yet.
Anyway, so while we're still in the hard drugs, we'll go ahead and end this podcast. So for Juan and myself, we'll go ahead and sign off for tonight. And we thank you for listening, and boiler up.